Hi, this is Alex Roman, Managing Editor for Metro Magazine, and welcome to Metrospectives, a podcast about public transportation, the private motor coach industry, and all things mobility. Today, my guest is host of the Transit Unplugged podcast, VP of Business Development at Trapeze, and now best-selling author, Paul Comfort. Comfort joins me to discuss how public transit is responding during COVID-19, how the pandemic will impact how the industry operates in the future, and about his book, The Future of Public Transportation. Now, my talk with Paul.
Hello and welcome to Metrospectives. I'm Alex Roman, Managing Editor for Metro Magazine, and my guest today is Paul Comfort, VP of Business Development at Trapeze and host of Transit Unplugged. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me on, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for taking part. I mean, anyone that follows you on social media knows that you like to be out and about and visiting with transit agencies. You know, how's this pandemic treating you, and you know, how do you feel not being able to kind of travel around?
Yeah, it's definitely been a big difference, as you mentioned. I've been kind of nonstop on the road for the year 2019, conferences and visiting clients, and especially through the podcast Transit Unplugged, where I interview CEOs. But you know, this has been different. But I don't know if you've noticed it, but I am busier than I think I've ever been working. Working from home. I normally work from home anyway, so that part's not a lot of difference. But I'm busy from my get out of bed at 6:30 or 7 and just come over and get on the laptop and having meetings and working until 7 or 8 at night every day. And so there's, I think everyone being at home and working from home, at least, you know, what they consider white collar workers, people that actually don't have to do real work and drive buses and do, manual work. But we are, we're busier than ever. People are available. They're not busy in other meetings, so they're available to talk to. And we're all learning to operate using, Microsoft Teams or Zoom or whatever your local, whatever your preferences for these things, but I'm on those kind of calls all day, and it's good to see people's faces. And I'm also trying to make sure I take time to reach out to people who I haven't talked to for a while that I feel like I need, I should touch base with them. So pretty much every day I call one or two people or text them, usually in the industry, a friend that I haven't talked to in a few months, and just trying to make sure we make wise use of this time.
Yes, definitely. And I've noticed, weekends are definitely on limits right now with this current situation, since, I mean, most of us don't even know what day it is.
It's the truth, isn't it? Yeah.
So I wanted go ahead.
I was going to say one other thing. I noticed that a lot of people are trying to take care of themselves more now. They're exercising or eating better since none of us are going out to sit in restaurants, like we used to do. People are still getting takeout and stuff, or drive through. But it's a great time. I always try to see the glass half full. And so I see it as almost like there's something in ancient history called the Year of Jubilee, where in the nation of Israel, they would push a pause every 50 years and, debts would be forgiven. Land would go back to the original property owners. People would not work the land. They would just eat what comes out of the land that year and what they've stored up. And it's almost like, if you look at it from a positive perspective, it is that same kind of pause. Now I know a lot of people are in a lot of pain, through this, and some people have lost their jobs. And so that's terrible, but it's also an opportunity to push, pause, and reflect and make sure that we are aligned with our inner compass, headed in the direction that we want to go for our lives and careers, with our family relationships, all of that. It's a little metaphysical, but I just think, we need to take this opportunity to kind of recenter and refocus while things are paused a little bit.
Right. Yeah. And it's definitely a good time to kind of reflect and realize what's most important to you.
That's right. You got it.
Definitely. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit. I mean, you have vast knowledge in public transit, having been in both the public and private sector, and as I mentioned, reaching out and talking to people. I kind of wanted to start, if you could talk a little bit about kind of the pandemic's impact on public transportation. What was the immediate impact, and what do you feel is kind of the ongoing impact right now?
Yeah, good question. So I've been talking to a lot of transit executives and frontline troops, so to speak, over the last month. We're really in it really hit hard here in America, really, as we got into March. And so like yesterday, I was talking to a CEO from Richmond, Julie Tim, and I said, you know, walk me through what happens, you know, from the first day you're aware of it to, you know, where you're at now. And it's the same story everywhere. You know, people heard about it. Then they got with their boards of directors and told them, listen, this is starting to have an impact on ridership. And when these governors and the president started putting kind of like, you know, stay at home orders in place or more lockdown, telling people not to work in their offices, it was almost immediate. There was a dramatic reduction in ridership across the spectrum from 30 to 60% for most bus systems, and for commuter train and commuter bus, 70 to 90% ridership drops. Long Island Railroad, man, when I saw that first number, and after the first week they were down 90%, I was like, holy cow.
Yeah.
And so, so then, you know, people then started to adjust to that, right? So they, a lot of people decided to adjust their routes to reflect the new ridership demand. So they went to Saturday only schedules or Sunday schedules, which reflect about a 60% drop in most systems. They started putting in new, you know, operating procedures, such as closing the front door of the bus so that passengers wouldn't get on and, you know, cough, and or vice versa, and there being a cross contamination at the fare box.
Right.
And so then people were required to enter the rear of the bus. And as a result of that, they weren't able to collect fares. So for a while, some agencies said, we're not going to force fares. And then eventually, most major transit systems have just gone fare free right now, and people are able to ride for free. Then as a result of that, there's been the, you know, there's always the other side of the coin, right? So like in Richmond, the CEO I was talking to yesterday, she said the next day when she made it free, all these kids got on. And they're running, the buses are driving around, and kids are yelling out the bus, you know, get on the bus is free. And so then the buses were overwhelmed with people in some cases. So then, like in Richmond, she instituted, you know, reaffirmation of the policy that if you're an unaccompanied minor, you have to be on the way to a job in a uniform or something like that. And so there's been, you know, and then other cities like Houston added buses at some of their heaviest routes because they wanted to facilitate the social distancing that's required. And that's been kind of the third wave that I've noticed over the last week or two, is a lot of no standees. You know, if the bus is designed for 40 passengers, we're going to say 20. Or if it's a smaller bus, you know, we'll do it accordingly, a ratio of that, and so that we can get the distancing that we need. So that, of course, has led to dramatically drop in fare box revenue. For
right.
commuter systems, fare box revenue normally represents at least 50% as a recovery ratio. For regular bus service across the industry, it's around 20 to 25, maybe 30%. And so they're not really collecting any now. And so they needed funds because that was a big part of how they operate. That's their cash flow. And so that was the call that APTA made and a lot of folks made, you know, to Washington is, hey, make sure we don't get left behind this time in the stimulus package. And they didn't. We were given, you know, Jane Williams, the FTA administrator, Elaine Chao went to bat for us. The unions supported it at the effort, and APTA and others, and CTAA and other associations. And we were able to get an historic $25 billion distribution, 280% of the FY 2020 allocations. It's the most money that's ever been given from the federal government out to public transit systems. So a big win, and that faucet was turned on this week.
Right.
They were required by law to begin the distributions using the normal 5307, 5311 formula funding mechanisms, to do it within 7 days. And Jane Williams and her great team at FTA got it done a day early. And so the lifeline has been turned on for transit systems now across North America.
Right. Yeah, and there's a lot, you know, a lot of questions there from the opening question. I guess first, you know, if you could talk a little bit about, from your perspective, you know, what those funds will go toward. You know, where's transit agencies most, you know, where's the most need for those funds right now?
Yeah, that's good. Good question. So the law allows people to use the funds for anything that is related to, you know, recovery from COVID-19 to current operating costs. It can pay for leave for employees who need to be on leave. So anything related to the coronavirus back to January 20th of 2020 this year, because, you know, there's a lot of agencies have expended a lot of money. Some people have done things like my buddy Randy down in, Austin, Texas. He's hiring 50 new cleaners, you know, because they need to make sure that they're cleaning, not just at nighttime. I know I was telling you beforehand, you know, when I ran the Baltimore bus system, you know, we'd have a group of cleaners at night go through the buses and sweep them out. And we would do a deeper clean, every so often, maybe once a week on the buses. I forget the actual timeline now, but now people are, are really ramping up the processes on the vehicles, and they're basically cleaning them at least once a night, and a deep wipe down of all high touch surfaces, and using medical grade cleaners. But they're also, a lot of them are doing much more than that. Like I've talked to some executives who say they now are cleaning at the end of each line. So you run from
Right.
A to B, and when you get to B, you have a crew there to wipe everything down. And so yeah, there's a those are some of the things that the funds can be used for. Obviously, there's a lot of additional expenses when you to when you're taking a transit system from what it's doing now, and then there's a whole new thing you have to do. There's a lot of other costs as well, a lot of administrative costs. A lot of people are working from home now. And what I have noticed though is that the procurements, I work in the private sector now and work with a lot of private companies.
Right.
The transit agencies are not slowing down on their procurements of needed technology or of needed, vehicles. I had the vice president of Proterra on my podcast, Comfort Corner, this week, which talks just about, kind of what slippage at all. Now, some bus companies have had to shut down temporarily. Even Proterra shut down for a day. But the nice thing is that Governor Newsom and other governors and the national level have determined that public transportation is an essential service, and so all the vendors and suppliers, including bus manufacturers, are included in that essential service function. And so people are going to be able to spend these funds on that. There's a lot of contractors out there, right? First Transit, Transdev, Keolis, MV Transportation, National Express, RATP Dev. They're running a lot of the service that's on the street today. Many transit services have dialed way back on their fixed route, but paratransit is still fully available as required by law. So, but even there's been some cutbacks. Some people are seeing ADA paratransit service reductions, the demand down to 60%. And so, transit agencies can use this money to keep those drivers, on the rolls and not lose them. One thing we don't want to do in our industry is, as you know, Alex, there's been a dearth of drivers. I mean, we saw what happened in Denver, right? Where they were going to have to cut routes just before this, and to get CDL drivers and even train drivers that aren't CDL for paratransit services has been very difficult in this economy where the unemployment rate was down to under 4%. And so the last thing we want to do is lay a bunch of drivers off because transit service levels are reduced and then never get them back. Think about it. I mean, let's just get real, right? A lot of paratransit services might pay their drivers $12, $13, $14, $15 an hour. Amazon's hiring 100,000 people right now at $17 an hour. So do we want to lose these drivers to Amazon and then have to ramp back up, put these drivers through another six new people through 6 weeks of training if we can get them on board? So no, we need to make sure in transit agency, the CEOs that I've talked to are very concerned that even if they don't have the work levels, they're not going to lay them off. They might furlough them and keep paying their benefits and keep paying, their retirement and keep their union position in the seniority and those kind of things so that they stay kind of in the system. But to lay them off completely would be a tragic mistake for our industry. We would not be able to ramp back up whenever this thing passes, be it, 3 weeks or 3 months.
It's funny. I was on a webinar yesterday with United Motor Coach Association, and one of their big concerns is getting drivers to come back because essentially they'll be making more on unemployment than they would be if they were actually working, driving motor coaches, which is just
That's right.
a crazy issue to think about. And
It is. Some of
go ahead.
some of the senators, Lindsey Graham was saying they needed a fix in the fourth stimulus bill. And so I think a number of people are talking about a number of fixes. And the bill was rushed through so quickly because it was really an emergency situation that there were a number of things like that that probably needed to be fixed in a fourth bill. So even if we don't get the whole package, Mitch McConnell may not let another $3 trillion or $4 trillion through the Senate, but I think everybody agrees we at least need a fix. A patch of some of the things that have popped open, kind of leaks in the tire since we filled it back up with this air of the third stimulus.
Right, definitely. And it's a weird question to ask because it's so, I mean, the situation we're in is really unprecedented. But I know transit agencies are built to kind of respond during disasters and life-changing kind of events. I mean, is this something where they had kind of a playbook to adapt to, or are they kind of just shifting on the fly?
So, you know, most agencies have what they call COOP plans, right? Continuity of operations plans. Pretty much every transit agency I know of has one. It's been required by most of the funding sources. Mm-hmm. It's almost like PMI on your house, you know, like primary mortgage.
Right.
You're required to have it, you know, unless you've got your house paid down to a certain level. The same thing with transit agents. They're really required to have these continuity of operations plans. So most of them have dusted them off. Most agencies also go through an annual, at least once a year, kind of practice of what would happen if there was a mass exodus from the city and we're going to be called on to help, you know, move people out. But as you mentioned, this is a little bit different than that, right? So this is not like surge. We're going to have so many people trying to get out of the city on our buses. This is the exact opposite.
Right.
How do we operate when systems are ramping down? So what it's requiring people to do, and this is why you're seeing so many webinars. So like I work for a technology company and there's a bunch of us technology companies. So all these companies are having webinars now, and we are too, saying, hey, this is how you use your software to, for instance, you know, reverse call to all your paratransit customers using what's called the IVR,
right,
where you can tell them once a week, you call them and let them know, here's the status of things. Or here's how you can use the software to have people book their trips from home, because paratransit reservationists now are not allowed to gather in the call center like normal. And so, you know, we may not have as many people available to take calls. And so we need people to ramp up, you know, using their phones. So it's basically all these technology things. And on the fixed route side, how do you ramp down service? So you need like good scheduling software for your drivers that ties into the union seniority list and the collective bargaining agreement to make sure it's done the right way. So they're all like refreshing themselves on all these features and functionalities of their technology that maybe they hadn't used before. So I think that is something that's different this time.
Right. And what kind of, what sort of lessons do you think we might learn coming out of this? I mean, what is public transit going to learn from this, and how is it going to kind of inform how they move forward?
Well, I think that, I'm going to be writing an article. I actually have written it. I'm just editing it now for your magazine for the month of May on the 5 long-term implications of the coronavirus on public transportation.
Right.
So I think one of the big things that, and I'll preview the article for your listeners, and they can read the whole thing in your May magazine, but it is it's the death of the fare box. So last year I was in London talking with Simon Reed, who is the kind of one of the chief technology guys for the bus transportation at TfL, Transport for London. And he said, Paul, we went cashless, like 4 years ago. I said, really? I didn't know that. He said, oh, yeah, the Oyster card, which is the multi-use card, smart card, was very popular. And then when Shashi Verma, the CTO of TfL, introduced, Tap and Go as the first major transit system in the Western Hemisphere or in the Western world to do this, it immediately caught fire. So this is allowing people to tap and go their regular Visa card, or the credit card.
Right.
And so pretty soon, less than 5% of the people were using cash. So he said, we just figured, we'll just get rid of it and it'll speed up processes at the fare box. And so they did. And he said there wasn't hardly any concern from riders about that. And so I think that's what's happening now here in the U.S. People have because of the crisis, they've been forced to, as we mentioned earlier, to not use the fare box and not use cash. And I think they're realizing, this works. And man, if you can, for instance, I'll go back to Baltimore again. So in Baltimore, at the fare box, you can purchase a day pass, which is $4 or $4.10 now. And so, but you have to give them the money. You give the driver $4.10 and drop it in the fare box, in the fare machines. You have to put it in. That takes a few seconds. Then the driver has to punch in some information on the keypad, and then a little day pass pops up for you.
Right.
Well, we timed that like in 2016, and that took 30 seconds on average to do that process. And you multiply that times the thousands of transactions that occur where people are doing that. And my COO, John Duncan, figured out, Paul, this is wasting 53,000 hours of productivity just by having people do that at the fare box every day. It's no wonder our average miles per hour on the bus system was so low, way lower than what it should be in a city. And as we're going to try to get out of this coronavirus situation and attract people back to transit, anything we can do to make the system more appealing will be better. And so one of the things we can do to make the system more appealing is to say there's not going to be cash transactions anymore at the fare box. As a matter of fact, just use your phone. There's so many ways you can use your phone now to pay your fare or use one of these tap and go cards, or easiest of all, just take your credit card and tap it on the validator and go. And
Right.
so a lot of systems, I think that's a lesson they're going to learn. And I was talking to two CEOs this week who also told me, Paul, we've gone free fares like Olympia, Washington did earlier in the year. And like Robbie Mackinnon, the CEO of Kansas City Area Transit Authority, has been moving toward. I think a lot of these systems are not going to go back to charging fares, especially mid-sized systems. They're just going to say, you know what? It's the tail wagging the dog. In Baltimore, it took me $2 to collect $7. That's what I
Right.
figured out. And so, the cost of fare boxes, the cost of the counting, the collecting, the danger involved in some bad neighborhoods or some, tough neighborhoods where there might be crime and people trying to steal money from the fare box in some
Right.
cities.
The safety of
All
drivers
of
as
that,
well.
yeah, the safety driver, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of that will lead to, and I know the unions will love that because they were always concerned, with me and my one of my previous jobs about that. And so I just think that people are going to say, you know what? And I hate to say this for fare box manufacturers, but I think it's what's going to happen. It's what I'm projecting. I think people are going to say, you know what? This is our last. We're not going to buy any more fare boxes. We're going to go ahead and transition out. And some will go, no fares. No fares required. We're just going to be free. Now, there could be some blowback on that,
Right.
like what Julie saw in Richmond, So there'll have to be some adjustments. But those are some, I think, some of the long-term implications that could come out of this whole event.
Yeah, and everything has its glitches, right? It's for every step you take, you got to make sure there's five or six steps in line to kind of protect that kind of development. I mentioned earlier that you travel quite a bit, and in that travel, you recently were in the middle of a book tour, I believe, at
That's
this
right.
point. You just launched it. Can you talk a little bit about your book and talk about some of the highlights of that book?
Sure. Yeah, that was one of the bummers about this whole thing was I had to cancel. I was going from Dubai to Dublin, to San Antonio and all the conferences and all the places where I was going to go. Obviously, were all postponed or canceled, and a lot of the separate standalone book tours we've had to postpone. I was really happy that WTS and YPT, the Young Professionals in Transportation and Women Transportation Seminar, their ch local chapters all over the country were going to host me, and hopefully we'll be able to do that again in the fall. But the book itself is called The Future of Public Transportation, Alex. And I basically got the idea as I was interviewing all these CEOs. I asked them about, what's coming next for your transit system or for the industry. And I said, there's so much interest right now in what's happening with autonomous vehicles, mobility as a service, and Uber and Lyft kind of augmenting public transit. It's really caught the attention of the public. So I thought it was time to put a book together. And so I did, and I asked 40 of my friends who are leading experts in the field across the world, from Dr. Graham Curry, a professor at Monash University in Australia, to MJ Maynard, the CEO of Las Vegas Transit, when they call it the RTC, and everywhere in between, to write on various topics. And so, about what's going to happen in the next 2 to 5 years and beyond. And most of the things they wrote about are future-proof. So I don't think coronavirus is going to change much of it. Basically, the book is broken into four sections. Practical improvements happening in things like maintenance, how artificial intelligence is starting to be used now to predict when you need to bring vehicles in for their service, those kind of things, to asset management, reporting, staffing. And then a section on CEOs. So we've got 10 CEOs, in places like Vegas, Toronto, Phil Verster, Charlotte, John Lewis there, a former MTA alumni who's there in Charlotte now doing great things. Steve in Nashville, San Antonio, all these folks are speaking about kind of what's coming for their transit system in the next 2 to 5 years. And again, most of that's still going to happen, I think. And then I asked the four major transportation associations to give me chapters in the book. And so they did. So Paul Skoutelos wrote a beautiful chapter on all the things happening right now and what's going in the future from APTA, Scott Boger from CTAA, Rob Puentes from ENO, Center for Transportation, America's foremost think tank on it. And then I went to Canada. Marco D'Angelo has become a good friend, head of CUTA up there. So they wrote that. And then the last 20 chapters are top transit trends. So these are, what's happening with Hyperloop, what's happening with mobility as a service and smartphone apps and, zero emission buses and, payment jewelry and everything, and even, air travel, like, where, Uber now is, I was moderating the panel 2 months ago in Vegas, and on my panel was the guy from Uber Air. And I mean, it's real. I mean, it
Right.
is real. All these things that we thought were science fiction are now much more science than fiction. And so anyway, that's what we talk about. And the book is a fascinating read. It's long. It's 425 pages long. It's available on Amazon for either digital download, or you can buy the book itself. And Barnes & Noble is carrying it now as well online. You can buy it there since you can't really get to a bookstore anymore.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, it's gotten great reviews. And thankfully, to the folks, it became the number one book in the world on transportation for 2 weeks at the beginning of March and was an Amazon bestseller. So that was very exciting. Now I can put, you know, number one bestseller author behind my name. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so now what I'm doing is, the next step is, I just had a bright idea one night. I woke up and I said, I know what I should do. I should make this into a children's picture book. And so that's what I'm doing. I put together a storyboard, and I've got an artist working on it, and I'm working with some publishers. I may end up just self-publishing it. I'm working with all of them, but I think this is the best way to get it right into people's hands, and I hope to have it available within a few months. And it basically tells the story of how mass transit has helped our, you know, from Tom Thumb Railroad, you know, all the way to Hyperloop and everything in between, and pictures of that so that we can sit down with our children, especially those of us who work in the industry. You know, our kids don't really all the time know exactly what we do. It'll be a great, like, 32-page read with beautiful pictures and say, okay, you know, here's what happened when we went from streetcars, electric streetcars, you know, to the next phase. And it's a history lesson about how mass transit has gone, you know, down for the last 200 years and what it's going to do in the future. So I'm working on that now. It's going to be called The Past, Present, and Future of Public Transportation. That'll be coming out in a few months.
Yeah, that sounds really fun, actually.
It'll be fun. My grandkids, I even had some of my friends show it to their kids. And one of them, John Duncan's son, Max, in the third grade, wrote me a book report on it.
Because
I let him look through the storyboard, you know. And,
right.
But anyway, there's nothing else like it on the market. I went to bookstores and I looked through. There's really nothing like it. So I think it'll be unique and people will love it. It'll be cheap, too. I'm going to keep it. Like when I did this book, you know, I put it out for 99 cents for the first basically month because I wanted to get it in people's hands, the electronic version. And so
right. We're
going to keep this book very reasonable, probably under $10, and make it a nice, fun book for people.
Well, that's great. Well, Paul, thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, great to be on your podcast with you. I wish you much success, and your magazine is a blessing to our industry, and keep up the great work you're doing as well.
Thank you. You as well. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for listening to Metrospectives, a podcast from Metro Magazine. Be sure to check out all the latest industry news at metromagazine.com and follow us on Twitter @MetroMagTweet.